Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective.
Is it?
It is.
Oh my God, wow.
Welcome.
Thanks.
Hello. Hello, everybody. So this is our What's in the News episode that we have every week. And last week, I think it was last Thursday or Friday, the news about Sudan really started breaking and coming in strong through mostly social media, some Western media outlets. And I posted on our Twitter because I had started thinking, like, people are going to wonder why we didn't talk about this.
Yeah.
And it's because last week we recorded our What's in the News episode early.
Yeah.
So by the time that was really, really hitting and breaking, we had already recorded our episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, a lot of stuff has been out for a while. The past month, it's been pretty big. But also, for me, it was something that I was aware of, and I knew that we would discuss. But also, we've been talking about a lot of heavy hitters lately. We get very, very fired up. And I liked last week's mini episode because we had a chance to just kind of take it easy and enjoy and just talk about other things besides very serious topics, which I think sometimes you and I need to recharge and our listeners probably need to recharge. It doesn't mean that we are not interested in the more serious things going on. It just means that sometimes we're not going to get to it right away. So we are going to dedicate most of this episode to talking about Sudan.
Yes. It's something that I thought that we really did need to talk about.
Yes.
Because in large part, Western media outlets are not covering this as strongly as I feel like they should. I feel like they are beginning to cover it more, mostly because of pressure from social media, which whenever things first started, I started, you know, seeing things crop up through social media influencers talking about it because there was a media blackout in Sudan, which we'll talk about. And I remember feeling, I think I'm very cynical in that I feel like people kind of do things to bring attention onto themselves.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I thought was happening here.
Well, because a lot of people do it. It doesn't.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if a lot of people did do it for that reason. And it doesn't surprise me that you would take it as that.
Right.
At first glance.
But you know what? Honestly, even if that's why people are doing it, it doesn't really matter because it is actually important.
Yeah.
This is actually one of the cases in which really pushing this on your social media can actually make a difference and actually is making a difference.
Yeah.
So I support it in this case. And honestly, your intentions don't really matter as long
it's
as
still getting the,
yeah,
I guess publicity might be the wrong word, but the viewership that it
I mean,
deserves.
publicity, it's true. It's needed. So let's kind of talk about what's going on in Sudan. Let's talk about what prefaced the situation, what created the situation that is now going on in Sudan.
Yeah, it's a long time coming. I mean, when I was in high school, we had a club called Save Darfur.
Yes.
And we all, you know, we had the shirts and that would donate money and all this kind of stuff.
That was
and
a huge deal in the early 2000s.
Huge.
Yeah.
I mean, and I went to high school 2006 through 10, and it was still a really big deal then in trying to raise money and awareness for things like that. So this is something that, like, I didn't even realize I've actually kind of known about for a really long time and how it's all kind of led up to this.
Right. I mean, even in so much as, like, in 2012, I think it was, George Clooney actually went and got arrested, and he was like, we are going to have an enormous crisis on our hands. And that's what I mean when I say that, like, yes, maybe Western news outlets have been covering this for the last month or so, but this is something that's been going on for a decade.
Mm-hmm.
Or more than a decade.
Yeah,
and
almost
like
two.
Nothing has really been happening here.
Yeah.
I mean, well, okay, so let's start at the beginning. There has been a dictator, President Omar al-Bashir, in Sudan, and he has been the president for 30 years. He became the president in 1989 through a military coup and has essentially, although he's continued to get quote unquote reelected, haven't been democratic elections that have been, you know, putting him back into power year after year.
Yeah.
He's also been guilty of numerous atrocities and human rights violations, including the situation that happened in Darfur.
Yeah, he was actually, there was an issue for his arrest in 2009 on charges of genocide and war crimes in Darfur. and other arrest warrants in 2010. And then in 2014, the case was suspended because of a lack of support from the United Nations Security Council, which is really disappointing.
Yeah, so the way that he's been treating his people for a long time, everything was just kind of like bubbling over for a long time. I mean, since George Clooney kind of came out and talked about it in 2012 and before then, but that was kind of like there was a national spotlight here in the United States on it for a moment there. There were people dying of malnutrition at that point.
Oh, yeah.
So in December, everything started to kind of like bubble to the surface with the Sudan uprising.
Right. And I was reading a lot online, and a big question was, he's been arrested. In April, he was removed from power. A military control would then oversee the transition of power. He had several other former members of his regime. Oh, sorry. He and several former members of his regime are being held in the, I don't know if it's Kober. Yeah, Kober Maximum Security Prison, and he faces 5 counts of crimes against humanity and 2 counts of war crimes. So it's like, okay, he's been arrested. So what are they protesting is a lot of people's question.
But just to, okay, so I want to rewind the clock just a little bit, since this is like a feminism podcast, because there is actually something really interesting that was happening in Sudan during the initial protests. So from December until he was arrested in April, there were a ton of demonstrations and rallies and protests going on that actually did garner some international attention. There was one very famous photo that I will post on our Instagram of a protester who was a woman who was standing on top of a car, and she was in this kind of like white outfit that was supposed to be reminiscent of women in the like 60s and 70s whenever they were protesting. It was kind of like a throwback to that. And so along those lines, I really wanted to highlight the women of Sudan here during this initial uprising. So the movement started off on an optimistic note with the nation's women at the heart of demonstrations. So I got a lot of this information from 2 different CNN articles, and then I also listened to an episode of a podcast called Ethnically Ambiguous, which is 2 Middle Eastern women who cover Middle Eastern news, and they talk about it every week on their show. So they did talk about this last week, so this is from one of those CNN articles. I'm just going to straight read from it. I'll put this article along with the other CNN article in our footnotes.
Good idea.
But here's an excerpt from that. Weeks into the protests that would eventually topple Sudan's dictator, the government realized it had an unprecedented problem on its hands. The number of women in the streets calling for change far outnumbered the men. So the regime's top brass sent a chilling message down to its officers on the ground. Break the girls, because if you break the girls, you break the men. Mm. What followed, several officials told CNN, was a systematic attempt to target the women at the heart of the biggest anti-government protests in decades. In the early months of the uprising, soldiers began to arrest women on the front lines in the capital, Khartoum, and activists say take them to secret detention sites where they were photographed naked and threatened with sexual violence. But Omar al-Bashir's 30-year grip of power began to slip. Soldiers began to make good on their threats. Some women were beaten senseless by police in public. Others were dragged into the vehicles of security forces and raped, activists said. The orders from the regime were clear, according to one intelligence officer. We all know what it means to break a girl, he told CNN. The assaults set off a ripple effect of abuse. Husbands began to divorce their wives out of shame, and fathers beat their daughters into submission in an attempt to keep them at home. But time and time again, the women returned to the streets, throwing tear gas canisters back at the military, climbing atop car roofs to urge the protesters on, and manning food and drink stalls to help in any way they could. So women in Sudan, despite being horrifically, I mean, they were systematically targeted in an effort to quell this protest, in an effort to, they thought if they could break the women,
they could break the men. They were being used.
They were being used because they were out in record numbers. But you know what? They continued to fucking show up.
Yeah.
And like, that's not a sacrifice that anybody should ever have to make.
Never.
Because it's horrific. But these, I just feel like whenever I was doing the prep for this episode and the research for this episode, I was just blown away by the people of Sudan, like their heart in this whole thing. They continue to show up
their passion and persistence is
for democracy. It's incredible.
Because they know what they deserve and they know what they're getting isn't enough. And it's like, if I have to go through hell and back, whether that means my life, my sanity, my body, they're right. willing to make that be something that could propel this movement forward, because clearly now it's gotten bad enough that we're finally taking notice.
You also have to take into account a lot of these people. These are young women, a lot of them, and they're women your age and my age.
Yeah.
And so this whole crisis in Darfur was happening when we were in middle school and high school.
Yeah.
So they were in middle school and high school.
They grew up
so
with it.
So let's talk a little bit about what that was. So it was estimated that more than 15,000 villagers were killed by the government-backed Janjaweed militia between 2003 and late 2004 in Darfur. Mm-hmm. And millions of Sudanese people were displaced. The Janjaweed militia was also accused of raping women in Darfur, and the government was accused of using chemical weapons against the community. So this is something that they have grown up with.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that they're very familiar with, and they're at their breaking point. So I can very much see that they're at a place where it's kind of like, it doesn't really matter what happens to us as individuals. We need to secure this future.
The idea of it being these young women who are being the faces of this change and this movement reminds me a lot of the generation who's in high school, middle school right now, who's fighting against gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're the ones that grew up, you know, post-Columbine. You know what I mean? They grew up that way, and they see how wrong it is, and they have taken it in their hands to attempt to make some change.
So to kind of piggyback on what you were saying before, so eventually, after months and months of protest, because the protests began initially about poor living conditions and lack of food and people dying of malnutrition, and then it escalated into a protest to try and overthrow Omar al-Bashir. And
at that point, it kind of, to me, it seemed like it became about prevention of the whole situation happening again, you know, not having this person put into power and perpetually doing horrible things and continuing to be reelected in really shady, non-democratic ways.
Right.
And wanting it to be an opportunity for people to start choosing their leaders.
Right. So after he kind of was taken out of power, of course, the people were overjoyed. There was a lot of celebrating in the streets. They thought they'd won in one respect. And so they were talking to military leaders who were saying, okay, we're going to work with you on a however many months, you know, plan to transition power into a democratic process to give it back to the people.
Yeah.
And then they kind of pulled back on that. They kind of reneged on that. And instead of it becoming a democratic process, they were leaving a lot of the people in charge who had been in charge whenever Omar al-Bashir was in charge.
Yeah.
So a lot of his people were still high up in the military.
Uh-huh.
And so what it felt like then to the people was, we're just going to have another dictator take his place.
Exactly.
Like, that's what's going to happen here.
Exactly.
If you don't allow the people to kind of take over in this situation. And that is what has kind of spurred on the most recent spat of demonstrations, which has led to really, really terrible bloodshed.
Yeah. So this activist Omar al-Neil told CNN, "All Sudanese people are in the street and demanding the downfall of the regime and not recycling the same people."
So the people of Sudan began a peaceful campaign, which includes not going to work and general civil disobedience for a civil state.
Yeah. They're saying that the streets of, is it Khartoum?
I think it's Khartoum.
They're saying that the streets are, like, mostly deserted. And a lot of, like you said, it's a very peaceful protest. On May 13th, there was a sit-in in the capital, and unidentified attackers opened fire, and a military police officer was killed. There was 118 dead total, and a large number of the protesters were injured as well. So these are, like, again, very, very peaceful protests, and they are being treated
horribly. Right. These people are unarmed. A lot of it is just refusing to go to work, refusing to open shops. It's essentially like a strike.
Yeah.
And there were, I think, three people during this strike who were killed, unarmed people who were killed during this protest, and a lot of other people who were working jobs that the government considered to be essential mm-hmm. were forced at gunpoint to go back to work. Mm-hmm. So that all happened, and there was just continued bloodshed in the street on and off. So very recently, a bunch of soldiers and paramilitary groups opened fire on a pro-democracy sit-in in Khartoum, mm-hmm. leaving at least 118 people dead. That's from the Central Committee of Sudan Doctors. 40 bodies were pulled from the Nile, and doctors have been reporting Oof. More than 70 cases of rape during this attack. The government has admitted to only 61 deaths and hasn't bothered to address the accusations of rape at all. The World Health Organization has reported at least 784 people in Khartoum have been wounded in the last week as a result of military confrontations, and the massacre has horrified human rights activists and governments worldwide.
Yeah.
Sudan is sliding into a, quote, human rights abyss, according to the United Nations, and they are calling for an independent investigation.
Yes. So, for what the United States is doing to attempt to help them out, critics have definitely accused the White House of inaction because, of course, it's Donald Trump. What do you expect? But there's a man named Donald Booth, who is a retired U.S. ambassador and former special envoy who will lead the U.S. efforts. He served as special envoy for Sudan and South Sudan from August 2013 through January 2017. He traveled to the region this month where he and two other U.S. officials will urge the Sudanese security forces to end their attacks on civilians, withdraw the paramilitary raid support forces from the city, and allow independent investigation of recent violence. So there, it seems like finally, there are other countries who are intervening and attempting to get involved. And something about this man, Donald Booth, that really stood out to me is that he's retired. He's done. Like
he's doing this of his own volition.
Exactly. He knows that he can do good and hopefully make a change. And that made me really happy. That stood out. It's just unfortunate. His name is Donald.
Yeah. I was like, Donald has been ruined for everybody.
He sullied the good name. We just have to think of Donald Duck.
Or Donald Glover.
That's true.
So, yeah, when talking about like something that things that we can do. Donate to UNICEF. UNICEF has really been working hard to kind of help the situation that's been happening in this region. They also have a focus, and I think that this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, they have a focus on the lasting impact that this is having on children who have grown up with this violence mm-hmm. and what that's doing to the children, the last couple of generations who have grown up in this kind of unrest and trying to figure out how to navigate that and get them the kind of help they need.
Yeah, one thing to be aware of, though, another article that I read is a lot of fake Instagram accounts who are asking for money and donations and
yes.
things like that. So
there's a couple verified GoFundMes.
Yeah.
But other than that, you really need to be very careful about you can do it with the best intentions, but just know that people suck and there will always be people out there who are trying to, like, take advantage of you.
Yeah, it's kind of like Kony 2012.
Yes, girl.
I know someone who did that.
We can have a whole talk about that.
Right?
Okay, so another thing that you can do, and I just want to talk about this really quickly, and this is the last thing that we have to talk about, or I have to talk about mm-hmm. this subject. There was a media blackout in Sudan with the government cutting off access to the internet, and that made it difficult for protesters to communicate with each other, and it also made it hard for the people of Sudan to communicate what was happening to the outside world. So sharing what is happening in Sudan, actually, you know, sharing that to your social media accounts actually is important. It actually does do something. I do encourage that you do that.
Changing your profile pictures to, like, that dark blue, it made me Google it. It made me want to figure out what was going on.
So, yeah. As you may have noticed, a lot of people have been changing their profile pictures to this color of indigo. We did that on our Instagram. I've noticed a lot of people, especially on Instagram, but also across other social media platforms, Twitter and Facebook, that are also doing that. And I will explain why that is something that's happening right now. Mm-hmm. So, Mohamed Hashin Mantaj was 26 when he was gunned down by Sudanese security forces last week. And his favorite color was this shade of indigo blue, and it has become a symbol of Sudan's pro-democracy uprising. Thousands have changed their avatars to the same color, including the hashtag Blue for Sudan. It started off with Mohammed's friends and family. It was his favorite color and his display picture on all his social media accounts. So,
oh wow,
that's how it started. It was his Instagram. It was his Twitter, you know. And now it represents all martyrs and standing in solidarity with the people of Sudan.
Wow.
So I know it can seem like this gimmicky, hopping on the bandwagon, Kony 2012 kind of thing that people jump onto. But in this case, because there was a media blackout, because the Western media outlets have not been sharing these stories the way that they should, influencers and like people on social media platforms sharing this and not letting people forget about it, actually is doing some good in this case.
It's creating curiosity. It's making people research, look things up. It's bringing it to the public's attention. And if they can't post things on social media and communicate with us, we need to do the best that we can to bring awareness
and,
to it.
And, I mean, guys, really, like, this, there's a reason why we're spending most of our episode talking about this. This is an atrocity.
Yeah.
Hundreds of people are injured. Hundreds of people are dying. Hundreds of people are being raped, sexually assaulted. It is horrifying what's happening, and it's happening by their own government, which is terrifying. This is their home, and they've been living under a dictatorship for 30 fucking years. So it is something that I really, really want us not to get distracted and pay attention to these things, because they happen in a part of the world that people don't want to pay attention to. So,
yeah, especially in the U.S., I feel like it's so easy for people to push away thoughts when it comes to Middle Eastern countries because of...
Or African countries,
in African countries because of our fears and our prejudices against those people. And we need to be bringing it to the forefront to change that narrative, I think. And
absolutely.
I'm hoping that through a lot of the social media activism that's going on, that hopefully we can start more broadly changing that narrative.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I have, I always feel silly bringing up things after the main topic, but we did have someone message us saying that they wanted us to talk about this, and I had already taken my notes, and I was like,
It's a good cap.
It's a good cap.
That's a palate cleanser.
Let's bring it down a little bit. It's not as important, but it is still an interesting conversation. So, Taylor Swift came out with a new song called You Need to Calm Down.
I have not even heard it.
I hate myself for liking it. I hate myself.
You don't have to hate yourself.
But I'm bopping along.
What she's good at.
I date a music snob. So I'm like, oh God. Because I usually don't like a lot of her like recent stuff.
Here's the thing about pop music. Like pop music, you're supposed to be able to project whatever you're feeling onto pop music. Good pop music does that. And I don't have any hate for good pop music. That's what it's here for.
Exactly.
Like
It's here for good vibes and good dancing and whatever.
It's like, for a summer pool party. That's what it's here for, you know?
Analyzing it, whatever. But in this case, I am analyzing
it.
Yes. So, the song itself, and also kind of in the video, it starts out with her kind of talking about some of the negative responses she gets on the internet as a celebrity. And she's, you know, she tosses the phone in her trailer park and the whole thing sets on fire and she walks away. And then as she's walking away from the trailer, we start seeing all of these different...
Why is Taylor Swift in a trailer? I'm sorry, I haven't seen this video, but I'm like...
I mean, she's glammed out. Like, she's in, like, a pink puffy coat and, like, bedazzled glasses, and it's kind of like a glamorous trailer park kind of thing. And she steps out, and it's this,
I don't know
like,
why that rubs me wrong, just because I'm like,
it's
Taylor,
weird.
You've never been in a trailer in your fucking life.
There's a lot of really weird things that happen in this video that I think people gloss over. And then she walks out, and it's a bunch of different LGBTQ celebrities throughout the video. There's like 40-some cameos in this video. It's insane. Everyone from Adam Rippon to the Queer Eye guys to Ellen DeGeneres to fucking
RuPaul, I think.
RuPaul,
I heard,
and Jesse Tyler Ferguson and his husband. It's like a Laverne Cox. It's a plethora of the LGBTQ celebrity community. So it goes on then to talk about, you know, there's the whole line, shade never made anybody less gay. Why are you mad when you could be glad? But it's G-L-A-A-D.
Of course.
Glad. And so there's a lot of really positive things that we can take from this. But
to me, that feels so fucking pandery.
Exactly. I
get it. And like, whatever, exposure is exposure. Obviously, yes. A lot of people agreed to be in this video, so yeah. Fine. But it feels like you are using gay people as an accessory, and that annoys me.
100%, like, Keegan. So people are saying, you know, anytime that we can see this community on our screens, it's a positive.
Great. Yeah.
But here are some things. So it features her basically comparing the plight of the taunted celebrity with the horrible persecution that the trans and LGBTQ community have gone through. They also show these homophobic people who are like hillbillies, missing teeth, really like
stereotyping them,
picket signs that are saying things like Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. Like a very outdated
kind of... I mean, not to say it doesn't still happen. I'm absolutely sure that it does, but like, yeah.
But the thing that bothers me is that those aren't the people who are affecting our legislation.
Absolutely, not policy.
Who are affecting our policy, mm-hmm. who are affecting the grand scheme of our population, absolutely. Especially in the United States. Mm-hmm. Those people aren't the problem. They are a problem.
They are a problem.
They're a huge fucking problem. But
it's distracting.
Exactly. It's not focusing on the rich and powerful who actually have a lot of influence.
Just far more insidious because it's a prejudice that might be less out in the open and less loud, but is far more dangerous.
Exactly. And the only image of persecution that has faced the LGBTQ community really is a scene where a man is painting the Stonewall Inn. But who is painting the Stonewall Inn? Ryan fucking Reynolds? The only straight person besides Swift in this entire video is like, he's got like a paintbrush in his mouth and he's like painting like the burned and broken Stonewall Inn. And that perplexes me. And people are like, oh, they're showing allyship. This whole thing is allyship.
But you're shifting the focus. Like, to me,
exactly.
And that's so obnoxious.
And allyship, I read something very interesting where they're talking about allyship, how there are allies who are doing good and there are allies who are stealing the spotlight.
Absolutely.
The fear for many in the LGBTQ community is that allies may change and defang what queerness, and I'm quoting this from The Atlantic, means. The A in LGBTQIA+ is often mistaken to mean ally rather than asexual or aromantic. And there's a quote that said, if heterosexuals become overly important in the gay movement, then it becomes harder to talk with precision mm-hmm. about what the movement is actually for.
Amen. So, it's not about us. I think about this every time Pride comes around, because it's not like I don't want to like slap my face in glitter and put on a rainbow tutu and go to Pride. Like, I do.
It's turned into a party.
It's not about me. And I'm very, very aware of, like, I don't want to make these events that are meant for a marginalized community about the straight community.
Well, and you bring up another point that I had written here where a lot of people have turned Pride into being this party. I have mm-hmm. a lot of friends, especially back home, where it's like, it's Pride. Like, let's get drunk and wear rainbows and sparkles.
I'm sorry. It's not St. Patrick's Day.
It's not. It distracts the focus of what Pride is supposed to be. Explainer for Vox, Alid Abad Santos says, it's hard to shake the feeling that the commercialized mass appeal has further dampened the Pride Month's fiery political roots and helped obfuscate the less pleasant, less talked about issues that matter for many people in the LGBTQ community. So he is talking about how it is taking away from where we need to be putting our focus and where we continually need to be focusing on change and bettering the community rather than it's not, there's Pride, it's a celebration, but at the same time, it's a time for us to focus on where things need to change. And as an ally, you should be focusing on how you as a straight person can help make positive change.
And to be spreading the history of what Pride really is, because I feel like that is a weapon that a lot of homophobic people put in their arsenal, uh-huh. that Pride is just a party where you can walk around half naked, and they don't understand. You as an ally should be spreading the information of how Pride started.
Yeah, you should not be celebrating.
Right. I mean, like, of course, like, be an ally, celebrate with your, like, your LGBTQ friends, but also, like, your job is also to listen, and it's also to stand up for your gay friends whenever things happen, and it's also to spread information about, like, how Pride started.
It's an everyday
thing. That's what your job is. And
exactly.
I don't know, this video, you know how I feel, like, there are things about people like Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus that rub me really wrong. And it's not to say that everything they do is wrong,
yeah,
or that their heart is in the wrong place. It's just to say that glomming on to marginalized cultures, yeah, and identities, because, like, releasing this during Pride was such a strategic move on her part.
There were positives in the fact that since she mentions GLAAD, they've received ridiculous amounts of donations.
Fantastic. You know, I love that. But,
yeah,
you know, I still have mixed feelings about this sort of thing.
Well, and the other thing that really, you know, put the cherry on top of the sundae for me in my pissed off mindset is the fact that the video ends with her and Katy Perry mending their relationship. She's dressed as
She's
dressed as French fries, and Katy is dressed as a hamburger, and they see each other, and they come together, and they hug, and everything's happy.
To me, that doesn't feel like it's the time. Like,
it's
this isn't the time to turn this around. If you're truly trying to make a statement, making
there's
this all about
things
you
going on in one song
and your celebrity, it undermines your whole message. And then, like, I just don't like it.
And the thing is that the whole song is not about that. To me, the first time I heard that song, it was like there's mentions of Pride. And I was like, that's so cool. And then I see the video, and that's, like, the premise of the whole video.
Feels gimmicky.
Yeah, it's so gimmicky.
Yeah.
Yet she's starting talking about mean tweets she gets. She's like, damn, at 7 a.m., like, I'm starting my morning off with this, like, hate mail. And then it moves on to something so serious that I'm hoping is making people think and is thought-provoking that they do their own research.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's ending with something that's very selfish. But one thing that is important to note is that she's made it very clear that it was pretty recent that she started being politically active, not just to the public.
Which we've talked about.
But in her own personal life.
Mm-hmm.
Not just to the public, but personally.
I'm not surprised by that.
No, not at all. And I applaud her for starting to become more politically active and wanting to be a part of that conversation because she has such a voice and such a large audience.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to forgive her a little bit at times for not always getting it right. She does have a lot of people around her who I think could be guiding her a little bit better with certain things. But We do have to, you know, give her credit where credit is due.
Sure.
Yet still critique
things,
her downfalls, because she needs that. She can't continue to do those things.
I feel the same way about her as I do about Miley Cyrus. Like, to me, they're on the same level.
I mean, Miley at least identifies as being
queer. But that's part of the problem with her.
Yeah.
Because she had a thing after she married Luke Hemsworth where she was
Liam.
Like, whatever. Where that brother, Hemsworth brother, where she came out and was like, because she identifies as pansexual, where she's like, I think this is a real win for the queer community because it says that, like, even though you're queer, you can still marry a man and you're still queer.
No.
And I'm like, yes, you can marry
a man
and you're still queer, but, like, you're centering yourself in a way that I think is so gross, and you're glomming on to these identities. To me, and this might be wrong, and I might get some hate for saying this, but, like, to me, both Taylor Swift and Miley Cyrus, they do this thing. Miley Cyrus did it with the black community as well.
Yeah.
Where they do this thing where they don't want to be rich, boring white girls, privileged white girls. And so they glom on to other identities.
Yeah.
In order to make themselves more interesting.
There's other ways to do it that's very fascinating.
And I'm not saying she's not a member of the LGBTQ community. I'm not saying that I'm undermining her sexuality in any way. I'm just saying centering your relationship with a man and your marriage to a man as something that is some benchmark
win
for the LGBTQ community is so misguided
it's tone deaf. It's very bizarre. But
I think Taylor Swift's intentions were good. Like,
yeah.
I understand, kind of. I think they were as good as much as anything she does, because as we said in our Problematic Faves episode, I don't think Taylor Swift does anything without carefully calculating how it is for her image.
Her release dates, her Easter eggs. Right. Insane.
There's no way that, like, she would ever do anything that would be hurtful to her own image. So I think that she did this with the best of intentions as much as you can within capitalism, you know? So, I have mixed feelings about it, but.
Yeah.
Okay. So, guys.
You guys.
That was a lot.
So our cutoff for our coming out stories is done, but we lengthened when we are going to be recording that episode. So if you haven't sent one in and you're worried that it's too late, go ahead and send them in and we'll just keep taking them.
We'll keep taking them. If it's too late, you know, we're sorry if we don't get around to reading it on our episode. We'll try and make time for it maybe during a mini episode another week. But definitely just go ahead and send it in anyway if you're thinking about it. We've gotten a few more this week, so we're really excited to record that episode. And you can send in those coming out stories or your sister solidarity stories to neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. You can also get us on Instagram. Again, thank you guys. We are over 10K on our Instagram, which is awesome.
And now we're at 10K downloads.
We got 100,000 downloads.
100,000 downloads. That's what I meant.
Yeah, so we're over our 100,000 download mark, and that's a huge accomplishment for us. So thank you guys for doing that. We are so happy that you're enjoying the show and, you know, you continue to tune in every week and listen. That's so important to us. Yeah. And it makes us feel really good. And, you know, if you're wondering what you can do for our show, just tell a friend, talk to people about it. That's really the best thing that you could do for us. It's so helpful to us, and we thank you so much.
Yeah, word of mouth has been a very powerful thing.
Absolutely. You can also follow us on Facebook. We have a business and a group page. You can review us on our business page. You can also review us on Apple Podcasts. We would love more reviews there. We'll feature you on Reviews Day Tuesday.
We
you
sure
can
will.
Get us on YANF Podcast,
YANF
Podcast. You can listen to us on Radio Public. I just had a friend of mine recently. She listens to Radio Public every week.
Mm-hmm.
She listens to us on Radio Public every week. And it is a small but very helpful way to support the podcast. So,
thanks you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed another mini episode. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on.
Bye.